Thank you, Justin. Now I will turn it over to our speaker, Captain.
Hey, guys. It's Judge Jim here. Tonight, we are going to meet a friend who graced us with his presence back on December 11, 2018. If you were hanging out at the Valley Group about 3 years ago, you might have seen him riding a bike around the church. I always thought he was an employee of the church. He was, actually. But he also became one of our friends here at AA. And growing up in Tulare, finally ended up in Visalia. It's one of his favorite phrases, is to keep it simple. Can we give a warm Valley Group welcome to Jeremy R. of Visalia?
Thank you, Jim. My name's Jeremy. I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to start. I am from Tulare, the valley here. I started school in Goshen, graduated Union, went to college in Porterville. My drinking started when I was young, before I even took a drink. I was between my mom and dad's house and my grandparents. I lived a lot. My grandparents always had me at their house and my drinking started with just pretending, you know, acting like back then, you know, whenever I was younger, we had candy cigarettes and it seemed to only happen at my grandparents' house, you know. I must have needed to escape reality whenever I was really young, you know. I could remember being, young, like, I would act like I was drinking whiskey, you know. I'd watch the Western movies with my grandpa, and he had these goblets, you know, and if I'd have my grandma give me some juice in them, and I would pretend it was whiskey, you know, and I'd have them candy cigarettes, I never felt the effects of it, you know, but that's how it started, you know. I mean, I don't know why I was like that, but I can also remember going back to the grocery store, you know, and then, you know, with my grandma, we had, what was it, the Palace Market, and there was a couple other. And I liked the alcohol section for some reason, you know. I mean, it was real dark in there. And, I mean, they had, like, chains on the wall. And, like it looked like you're in some kind of a cave or something like that, you know. And I remember I'd sneak off from her. And that's where she would end up finding me, you know. I'm just being in the back rooms of the stores, you know, the underground places. I felt fascinated with those things. My parents, they weren't alcoholic. My family, they didn't drink. You know, we had a strong Christian background. My mom and dad, well, I'll call him my father. My mom and father, they divorced whenever I was about 8 years old. And my mom took us and we moved. She met my dad, you know, my stepdad. I'll just call him my dad. He was in the Navy. He was a drinker. He drank a lot. And, I would come here during the summer and things like that. But, going through school, I went through, going through school, I ended up, staying here for a while. My stepdad was a bad drunk, and he was real physical, you know, violent towards me. So, but anyway, I lived here. It was back and forth till I ended up moving to Long Beach. You know, after I was in junior high here, I used to get into a lot of fights, you know, and when I got suspended, my grandparents and my dad, because that's, my dad lived with my grandparents, and that's so did I, sent me to Long Beach, you know, and that's where I finished the sixth grade. I graduated the sixth grade there, but I ended up breaking my hip, you know, my leg always kind of hurt, you know, and my mom would tell me, well, you know, when you're a baby, Dr. Hillman said that you're going to have bad hips, probably end up with a broken hip because I was growing too fast, you know. My bones couldn't keep up. So after Long Beach, when we moved from there to a place in Arizona called Avondale, and that's where my hip finally broke there, and I was 13, and I walked on crutches for a year until I was about 14, and whenever I got off that, off the crutches, you know, I mean, it was work. I delivered newspapers and did whatever I could, you know, and this is where my mind-altering, you know, thing started. A friend of mine, he stole a pack of cigarettes when we were at the store, and back then you could just get them down, you know, in the grocery aisle, you know, that you could just get them like they were a can of vegetables or something, you know, and the store security stopped us and called my mom and whenever I got home, she called the police, you know, had them come out there. See, my dad wasn't living with us then. He worked in nuclear plant. After he retired from the Navy, he was in nuclear. So he worked these power plants, and they'd have outages, so he wasn't there. So she thought I needed some kind of fatherly figures, and I guess she turned to the police. And that's where I met Officer Kennard of the Avondale Police Department. You know, he had, you know, he would talk to me, and had me watch this movie Scared Straight with him and all these things, right? But asked me all these questions, but where I would deliver my papers, you know, one day he was where I would work, right? And he took me in his car, you know, and he gave me what was tranquilizer. And the effect of that, at first it was, I felt like everything went away. You know, I had all these worries. I had to go to school. I had homework. I had to go to work. I had my newspapers. I had to take care of my brother. I had all my brothers. I had to all this stuff. I had to take care of the house and all these things. And what that did was, it made me not care about all those things. I wasn't stressed anymore. I felt like a hot air balloon had just been cut, and I just went free, you know. I was free to go. But that effect, you know, I got real talkative, and the effect of that, you know, at first it was good, but then, you know, tranquilizers, you can't move or anything, you know. It made me to where it felt like I was, if you ever been in the fair, how they have these things that spin around the gravitron. It felt like that, so I couldn't move or anything, you know, but I told my mom whenever I got home, I was unable to get home, you know. I didn't get home till real late that night, and I had to walk my bike home. I couldn't collect for my newspapers, and all this. I had all kinds of complaints, and I tried to tell her that, you know, Officer Ted gave me drugs, and she didn't believe me, you know. And, well, he would be everywhere I went, you know, and I told him I didn't like that shit, excuse my language. And, I know this is an alcohol problem, you know, program. I'm gonna get there. I'm gonna get there pretty soon. After that, I became open to a lot of things. I was a square, you know. I wasn't into anything like that. I didn't know what drugs were. I didn't know alcohol other than when my stepdad would drink. And then we were getting pink hearts, black beauties, yellow jackets. You know, and I was about 14 at this time. I just got off crutches, you know, and all these things were happening, you know. I was, I'll tell you how I was back before all this. I would, if I had, you know, I would break into people's houses that owed me money on my paper route. I delivered to the project. And one thing I noticed there is them people like to party. And they would, sometimes they would pass out, leave their doors open, things like that. And if they owed me anything for my papers, I'd just go in there and get it. You know, and, I used to sneak out my window a lot. And, when my dad got back home, I snuck out a lot more. You know, and, this one night I snuck out, and I usually sneak back in, and it got too late where I was at in the city. It started to get light, you know, and I couldn't make it home till they were already awake, so I decided just to run away from home, and I was gone for a couple days, and and that's when They finally found me, my mom and my dad. They were all pissed off, you know, yelling at my friend's parents. And, you know, so I was riding my bike home, and my dad hit me with the car. Hits me with the car, you know, and it wasn't long after that that I had to have another hip surgery, you know, and during all this, I had to have another hip surgery, and I was at home, and I had to have a teacher come out to the house and give me my week's worth of homework and answer any questions, and I'd give her all the homework that I'd done. And like I said, my dad liked to drink a lot. And I guess it was kind of a blessing in disguise that I got to move back to the valley. This was in Arizona. So I got to move back here after he scared my teacher away. So I had no way of getting an education. He came out of the room and he was all drunk. And I told him, you know, hey, my teacher's going to be here. And he just went up to the table there and he told me, he says, what the F is this bee doing here? And why do you have this bee in my house? You know, and she stopped going there, and my mom had to send me back to my dad, which I got back to Tulare, and I was about almost 15 whenever I came back here, and I stayed here, right? I got to stay here and, started going to school. I got back in, my cousins, they were all partying, you know, they had cars and everything. We'd go cruising, and, I started drinking beer, you know, and I liked it. It made me it made me forget about having to use the cane, you know. It made me fit in with all my friends like I was normal, like I, I would forget that I could be almost who I was before I left, you know, because I was raised around here. I knew all my friends. They all want to see me, but I felt like I wasn't enough anymore, you know. But alcohol kind of made everything better. It made me talk better. It made everything great, you know. And so I started drinking. And whenever I started having to go to school, I would ditch school a lot. And it wasn't because I didn't like school, because I really liked school. And it wasn't because I was drinking a lot. It was because I had to walk with this cane, and I just didn't feel good about, you know, I wanted to just crawl in a hole, you know. That's how I felt. And the only way I'd get out of that hole is if I drank. And so through high school, the obsession with the drink was there. I had a friend, you know, and I would stay the night at his house on the weekends, and we would get alcohol. We would go to, we'd walk, and there'd be bars along Tulare Avenue, you know, right there. They had Tommy's Club Lounge and a bunch of others, and across the street they had, you know, next to the memorial building. And, the people at them bars, they would leave alcohol in their cars, you know. I guess they would go in the bar, order a drink, but they would get drunk out. You know, they have all their drinks in their car. So I'd get into their cars and we would drink, you know, on the weekends and, all week, you know. That's all I would think about was the drink, you know, drinking. I'd have my dad take me to all these sports, memorabilia places, you know, where I could get a couple decks of cards, you know, baseball cards. And I would look through, you know, I'd had the Beckett thing, you know, and I would look through them like I was a stockbroker, you know, and I would find the ones that I could sell, you know. And back then, I, you know, you'd find a Bo Jackson rookie or anything like that. That's $40, and you only had to spend a couple bucks on a $5, you know. I might get like $100 on the weekend, you know. And that's how I did it, breaking in the cars. Well, most of the times they'd leave their cars unlocked. They were drunk, you know, and everything like that. So, but my first blackout, I never drank hard liquor. My first blackout was me and my friend. We had a cigarette and we wanted to smoke it, and we didn't have any matches. So, and we went to Long's Drugs, there in Tulare. It's, I don't know, it's something else now. But, Smart and Final. It's Smart and Final there in Tulare. It used to be Long's Drugs. But I walked in that store to ask for a pack of cigarettes. And sure enough, there was this, you know, where you see all the alcohol. And the first thing right there was a big handle of vodka. Well, I put that in my pants, you know, and went to the counter and asked the lady for a pack of, book of matches. And she told me, "What are you doing? You're too young for a book, you know, of matches." So she wouldn't even give me matches. So I took that. "Hey, my friend, look, I got this thing of vodka. No, whatever it is." So we went to the back of Long's Drugs to drink this thing. And I was like, "I don't want to drink it, really." So he tried to drink it. He threw up. I started laughing at him. Then I tried to take a drink, and I did the same thing. And then we kept trying, you know. And after about the third attempt, that thing was like water to me, you know. And I drank that whole handle. It was about a gallon of vodka. And I downed that thing. And then we're off to Motel 6 to get a book of matches so we could smoke this cigarette. But this is my first blackout, and I remember going waiting, and there's a couple girls about my age. They were asking for something about ice, and I was drunk at this time, and I thought You know, I started talking to this girl, and I thought it would be fun to put her on my shoulder. She was wearing a mini skirt, and I don't know what. Well, but this is the last thing I remember. I was trying to put this girl on my shoulders with my head up her skirt, and then that didn't work out too good. And then there was these two ladies that walked in there, and I tried hitting. I guess I tried hitting on this lady, and she said, "I'm old enough to be your grandma. What's wrong with you?" And I guess they ended up calling the police. But by the time the cops got there, I was already in the field. We were going to Kmart to get a book of matches, but I didn't make it. I blacked out. That's the last thing I remember, and I woke up in the hospital. Later on, my friend said that I didn't make it that far. He practically had to carry me almost halfway till the cops got there and had him at gunpoint because he thought he was the crazy guy, you know. And they pumped my stomach, and I didn't know it at the time, you know. I was just like, you know, they had to have my dad go in there, and they ended up sending me to YSB, youth services for treatment, you know, and family counseling, and that lasted about 10 minutes. I talked to the counselor, and she said, "Why do you want to kill yourself?" And I said, "I didn't want to kill myself." And, she says, "Well, the report here is you were dead. You were actually flatlined, and they had to bring you back to life even after pumping your stomach." And I said, "I was dead." I said, I told her, "Well, how can they sell that stuff? And why do people even drink it if it's killing people, you know?" And she just said, "Well, this was just a thing of, he didn't know any better, you know, and, I didn't know what I was doing, you know, so." And even after that, you know, I couldn't smell any kind of alcohol. It would make me throw up if I was just to smell anything that resembled alcohol, for years. And, well, eventually that went away, but, let me see, I drank after that. Drinking beer was fine, you know, let me see, prom night, my senior year, got pulled over, they did a urine test on me, and they seen that I'd been partying, and, then I had to go back to, like they say, institutions and jails and death, you know. So I was back in an institution, and went to Kingsview there, and all this stuff, it didn't do anything for me, you know. I mean, I was still fascinated on the drink. There was no stopping me then, you know. I mean, my first counselor that I seen was some of you guys might know Ole from the Alano Club, but he was working there at King's View. He was the first counselor trying to you know, get me to sober up, you know. But it seemed like all the stories they were talking just made me want to drink even more, you know. It was like, gosh, all these things ain't making me want to quit. It's making me want to go back out, you know. I had a friend waiting for me in the car, you know, every time I'd go there. So, I was, you know, still partying there, but, let me see. After I finished all that, I moved back to help my mom with my little brothers in Arizona. They were doing all these outages with the nuclear plant and everything, you know. So, came back here after a while, and, had a car. Got with all my old friends, you know, started living with my dad, but my drinking got to be where I was drinking during the day, and, I had some friends, you know, "Hey, just move in with us, you know, you could live here." And it was party all the time. I don't believe that we ever even shut our doors, even never locked our doors. We lived there on the west side of Tulare. And the door was always open. All my friends and everything, we were always coming and going, you know. And did that. Ended up with my girl. You know, I had a girlfriend, and my roommates, you know, he tried, my friend, he was a friend of mine, you know, then I was their roommate. He hooks me up with his sister and all this, you know, ended up getting married to her, had some kids, and that didn't last very long. You know, I mean, I tried to be the father and all this, you know, and my thing was, you know, he'd always come over to the house, and I was kind of like Scooby-Doo, you know. I tried to be the family man, but I'd say, no, I got to stay here, you know, with the kids and with my wife, you know, your sister. And he'd be like, you know, would you leave, you know? And I'd be like, no, I don't want to go. I'm just going to stay here, you know. Well, would you do it for eczema, you know, or would you do it? I do it for two Zimas, you know, instead of Scooby Snacks. If there was a drink involved, I would be gone. So, that was kind of my relationship, me and my friends, you know. That didn't last very long, you know. We ended up splitting up, and she, whenever we split up, she moved away, I stayed here. And then she sent my kids back to Arizona to live with my mom. And I went up there. You know, I wanted to quit drinking. I was drinking all these times, you know. I was drinking all through this. I mean, I was, till the wheels fall off, especially whenever we split up, you know, instead of doing what was right. And doing right by my family, I was real selfish. I always thought, you know, I was missing out if I wasn't drinking and all these things, you know. And let me put my glasses on because I can't even see. All right, and I've been talking for a while. All right, yeah. So, whenever I went up there, you know, I had, you know, this is where my higher power things, you know, I was always, you know, like, what was me, you know, the bad thing, why'd you leave me and all this, why, I was never good enough, and I'd forget about my kids, you know, and there it was, you know, I moved up there, I started working, and had my kids with me, And I didn't focus, you know. My drinking was, I would work and I would be drunk before I got home, you know. And my mom didn't like that. She wanted me to focus. You got these kids to think about, you know, and you can't be out there. But I was more into, you know, my life. I would say in my drinking, I lived in a ghost town. I live in a ghost town. It was all about the past and my future. I never lived in the moment, you know. I never lived in the now. And I was trying to make up for lost time, you know, and trying to use the drink for that. But, you know, how when we got it good, you know, they say an alcoholic will mess everything up at the most righteous moment. And, sure enough, you know, I mean, I was working at a paving company and, you know, drinking all the time. And then my boss there found me a good job for Shasta Pools. I was working 9 to 5, home at night, you know, weekends off and all this. But, you know, I messed that up. My drinking, I moved away, I left my kids there, I abandoned them, I left them there, I came back to California for the weekend and ended up staying here, and I was drinking, I found myself drinking till, until I had to get, I went in, I asked, I got some help for my drinking then. Let me see, 2000, I got married again. And, the same thing, you know, I kept trying to stay sober, and, I entered that relationship wanting to stay sober, and she thought it would be cool. And I ain't blaming her, because when she would bring alcohol to the house, I would drink it, you know. She thought, you know, hey, let's try to keep beer in the refrigerator for this guy, you know, and that didn't work, because it wouldn't stay in there. But let me see. My drinking ended up, let me see, after that, that marriage didn't last, you know, my kids, I kept trying to stay in their life. I was there most of the time. And in that marriage, it was mostly, she would be gone all the time. She was always taking off. But, so after we split up, everything happened, you know, let me see, in 2000, and I got sober. No, I didn't really drink like all the time. Like it seemed like as soon as I was away from, I didn't have any responsibility, I drank all the time. And sure enough, whenever I didn't have, I tried with this, you know, and in 2006, I got sober, and I stayed sober till about 2015. Yeah, I was sober for about almost 9 years. And 2015, I thought I could drink again. You know, I would just have a drink. And, you know, I was resting on my laurels. You know, I was sober all them years. I went to college. I graduated college. I was working all that time, you know, and I deserved a drink, you know. I mean, I got with some old friends and was the designated driver. That didn't last very long till I took that drink. I took a drink, and it was like an old lost love, you know, came back into my life. So I was just going to drink that day. I said, and sleep it off the next day. But I remember I got home that night and I looked at the calendar and I said, I'm just going to drink for the next year. You know, that one drink turned into a year. And after that year, I was like, couldn't do it. I was drinking so much that, by 2018, I was totally powerless over alcohol. I had delirium tremens. If I didn't drink enough, I can remember. I remember, like I said, I had a hip replacement and all this. I can remember parking my car and I was going to go to Walmart and get me something to drink. I really needed a drink. And, I just decided I was going to walk, you know, go to a bar or something, meet some people, but, I didn't get that drink fast enough, and I was hearing voices and seeing things, you know, and I would hear things like my hip would start vibrating, you know, and it would count off like it was a bomb, like 10, 9, like it sounded like the space shuttle was about to launch. All kinds of different things. If I didn't have a drink, the shakes, all these things, you know, and so I had to go through that, and I started working at the church, you know. I would pray, all my prayers would be, you know, God would be God, if only I could, if I would find work, I would go to church, I'll do all this, you know. And sure enough, I started working at the church where this meeting was, you know. And before this meeting was even here, I'd be like, gosh, I really need to go to a meeting. What's a good meeting? all the people I would talk to in recovery, they would say, go to the ICE house, go to the ICE house. That's a great meeting, you know. Oh, and I would never go. I would never go. And then the ICE house showed up to my church, you know. But I started working for the church, and I was trying to wean myself off alcohol. You know, I had a couple bottles, and I would just drink every now and then. And one night, one day, I got home from work, and there was, you know, somebody at my house that I thought she would be gone by then, and I tried to get her out of my house, and she was out of her mind, and she took the bottle, you know, and she started drinking it and trying to take these pills, and then I had a full bottle there, and I downed that bottle after she was going to take that, you know, and I took them, you know, I took her meds from her, and after I downed that bottle, I took off out of the house, you know, and as soon as she shut that door, I had it locked. I just took off one way, she went the other, but I was in a blackout, ended up waking up handcuffed to the hospital bed there at Cahuilla Delta, and I'd been, you know, blackout drunk. I couldn't stop. I ended up crying to this officer, you know, I can't keep doing this, you know. I mean, I didn't know what day was what. I didn't know anything. All I knew was drinking. And by that time, I was trying to maintain. I was trying to taper off, but I was totally in the grips of alcoholism, you know. I was totally, it had me. I was powerless. It wasn't fun anymore. I would hear things, you know. I would be in my little studio apartment, and I would see my neighbor drop through the ceiling at me, you know, and I'd be like, whoa, what, you know, talking to him. And then I'd get up, and there wouldn't even be anybody there. It would just be me. That would tell me it's time to take a drink, you know, just a little shot, you know. And, that's how it was for me, you know, and that's how it ended up. That's the end of the story of how I got here and to this meeting, you know, and I'm really grateful to this Valley group. And what I'd like to say is, you know, alcohol really, my mind was trying to kill me, you know. I kind of got that thanks to this program, working with the sponsor, getting to the root of these things where I keep causing the damage. I kept causing damage, you know, and I didn't see it. It was me, always about me. I was living in that ghost town, you know, of the past and the future. I never had no present, you know. And let me see, I had some notes here. I totally went off on my notes. I forgot to wear my glasses. What I'd just like to say is, I'm growing up. AA has actually let me start growing up, you know. It's taken me a lot, and thanks to this program and my faith and everything in my higher power, and knowing that he's always been there for me. I can actually see all the things that I used to drink or use as a crutch to drink. You know, it was all a facade. It was all a sham, you know, just to keep me doing what I was doing. And, what I was really doing was, I was hurting people. You know, I was a tornado. And you know, that's what I would say I was. And now, I'm more focused on helping people, you know, thanks to this program and working this program, because I can say that I've been to AA before, you know, and I never worked the program. It was told to me what I was doing was fellowshipping. You know, I would show up to the AA meeting, and I would think I was going to be miraculously healed through other people, just hanging out, and it would all, you know, I had no idea that there was a program to work here, and I can't believe that I actually worked this program, and everything they talk about went away. I was 10 months dry, I was a dry drunk before I actually got into this group, you know, and started working this program. And I was miserable, didn't know how. I still had the phenomenal cravings for alcohol. And it eventually went away. It's gone. You know, I can't explain it. It's a mystery. You know, this program works. This program really works. And I just can't believe I was fooling myself all those years. You know, and I was probably missing out on a lot. And like, cunning, baffling, and powerful is alcoholism. And, you know, this program works. Let me see what I was going to say. Yeah, my hopes, my experience, strength, and my hopes is that I can live. I don't have to live in the past anymore. I don't have to bring up the past because that's not me. And if I do, I'm living a lie. You know, that's not me anymore. And I don't want to even go back there. I really don't even like, you know, because that's not me. I'm not going to sit here and talk about all the wreckage that I've created because that's not me. And, that was in my alcoholism, in my destructive way. You know, I'm not going to, you know, glorify any type of wreckage that I had, you know, thanks to me. You know, that's all I can say about that. And, you know, I thought this program really works. I've got notes here. You know, and you know, another thing, I think this is funny, you know, that I started out my alcoholism as a young kid, pretending to drink and smoke and bubblegum cigarette, you know, and a tool that I have now is I pretend drink. And I will find myself like, dang, if I was to drink right now, I would feel like crap the next day. But I'm getting some noise on the other end, so I guess that's time for me to wrap it up. So I hope I've made some kind of sense to you guys, and you can get something out of this, because it wasn't for me, you know. This program's for me. I hope, I just like, wherever you're at in your sobriety, you know, if there's impending doom on your sobriety, you know, I'd like just for an exclusive limited time offer, 30 days, just try an extension, just give yourself another 30 days if you're thinking about drinking, you know, it's a free trial offer, you know, take it any time, you know, just an extra 30 days. And then just see where you're at. Just give yourself a couple extra days, you know, and see where you're at. And, just imagine what it would be like if you, you know, look back and say, man, if I was drinking then, I would be really messed up now, you know. That's what I find myself doing. I'm like a kid again, you know. I find myself doing that. I don't have the urges anymore, but, I started out pretending to drink, and now I'm sober, and I'm so good at drinking, I can see I pretend wreckage my life, and that helps me stay sober. Not wreckage, but if I was to drink, I know where the wreckage would be. You know, that's just something on a little personal note there. And, thank you guys. Really appreciate this program.